Korrektur beim Elias anbringen. Er sagt, ich bin aus Wien, ich bin Salzburger, mit einer Haller Großmutter, möchte ich dazu was sagen. Kein Problem. Nachreden.
So. Ups.
Jetzt geht's auf.
Ah. Sorry.
Clayton, welcome to Austria. Welcome to Hull.
Ah, thank you. I've been here many times before. Not here, but in Austria.
You've been to Austria. In fact, you're planning of moving to Austria, but we'll talk about this later. What we have seen here was obviously the beginning of a development which ended in the complete change of the countryside, of the area you lived in for 3 or 5 years, of Lower East Side Manhattan. How would you describe the present situation there?
Well, actually, while we were having supper, one of the ladies at the table who was sitting there was telling me about her daughter, who lives in a very, you know, small apartment in the Lower East Side, and she has a tiny little bedroom which only fits a bed, and she's paying $1,500. So I said to her, you must be living with three other people, which in fact she is. So that's part of the greatest change. And you have to remember, out of the Lower East Side, which is one of the really sort of major cultural centers of America, that's where, you know, so many of the cultural changes came out of. You know, Jimi Hendrix, Madonna, Charlie Parker, Jackson Pollock, Rothko had a studio there. And then you realize that that kind of artist or those people that are coming from sort of middle class and below can never do that again. I mean, if your daughter is going to go to New York City and share a small apartment with three other people and she's paying $1,500 to be in that little tiny room, I could never be me again. And so it's really just about money now, and it's about international money. It's not about New York. If you look at that, like, for example, part of those shots, there was a Max Fish there, and that small business, all of those businesses were wiped out. And so when you realize that all of those were successful small businesses and they couldn't survive in New York City, it used to be, you know, oh, I had a business, I got a divorce from my wife, I turned into a junkie, I couldn't pay the rent. It's not like that now. All of those businesses have been forced to close. And so what all of those businesses are turning into now are Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts and these international corporations.
Basically the same like all over the world.
It's slower here and it's more gradual, but yeah, it's definitely happening here. I mean, is there a Starbucks in Innsbruck?
Yeah, sure. I think so. Well, but obviously it was not a completely nice area before as well. You showed yourself pictures. It was a drug area. It was a crime area. So well, it wasn't an ideal place to live in, was it?
It's still a drug area. It's just that the drugs have changed. They've gone more sort of underground and sophisticated. Make no mistake, you can get any drug anytime you want in New York City, if you want cocaine or heroin or whatever. But the economics of those drugs has changed. All of those homeless people that were in the park weren't just a bunch of sort of shiftless black and Hispanic mostly people. They were people that lived in single room occupancy hotels and places like that. And Koch closed those places, changed the laws, so those people were thrown out in the street. So how did all of a sudden you end up with hundreds of people on the street? They were pushed out on the street. And that form of gentrification has continued, and it's like uber gentrification now. And so you have all of this, like where I live, which was pretty much, you could see looking out the window, it was kind of a very sort of a desperate living place. Well, I have four luxury hotels right around from where I live. That's four luxury hotels. And those four luxury hotels have displaced many, many people. And if you look at one of the people, like, you could follow. You know, the interesting thing about documenting a neighborhood like that is that I've documented those people for many, many years. Like sometimes where the kid shows up with the ice cream cone. I mean,
aren't any of those people left?
The people that lived in the projects basically are left. Those people that had sort of subsidized housing that they haven't torn down now. But, you know, I mean, there's sort of a trick to every part of it. One trick is that we had a Hispanic city council person who was supposedly radical, and once she got out of power and into Bloomberg's hands, she then was trying to sell the project parking lots for luxury apartments. And the song and dance was, well, you know, these societies can live with each other, which we know is not really true. I mean, you have to remember with Bloomberg, what he did, one of the things he did was trying to destroy the library system. And even after he left, he put in high power people in sort of administrative positions, and their job is to close libraries. Now, why would you have a city where you're trying to educate people, and one of the cheapest places to educate people is kids in a library after school. And you have to realize in an inner city that the library is one of the only places where good kids can go after school and kind of, you know, learn on their own, read books and things like that. Well, he put in the situation of closing libraries. He tried to close one of the main libraries in New York City. So on one hand, we're talking education. On the other hand, we're talking about the complete denial.
So you think it's deliberate policy of throwing poorer people out of town? Is it like that?
Well, you could say supposedly the will of the people is the law of the land. Isn't that how democracy works? And after Koch, people realize by the time a mayor is in the system for 3 years, you know, when you come into a body of people, a culture has all the aspects attached to it. It has the criminals, the geniuses, the good guys, the bad guys. And people realize with Koch, by the time it got to his third term, the city was extremely corrupt. There's a book out called City for Sale, and it just shows you sort of the decline by the third term of Koch, how many sort of criminals were really operating in his system. So people said, we only want a two-term mayor. Well, it turns out that Bloomberg, who started off with $7 billion, and now he has like 20-some billion dollars, you wonder how, wow, making a dollar a year, how do you triple your billions? We're not talking about millions, we're talking about billions. I'll take one of those dollars. So you realize that he bought a third term, which the people, the will of the people will be the law of the land, had in fact, he turned that over with money. And the incremental change is just dramatic. Like, you know, our biggest resistance was New Yorkers. That was who we had the biggest problem with in terms of fighting gentrification. Now, why is that? Because they were always used to the city going through changes. They saw the beats, and they saw the hippies, and they saw the punks, and they saw the skinhead, but it always came back to being New York. After Bloomberg, New York was never New York again.
So the city has changed completely.
Absolutely.
100%. And you're planning to leave the city, and in New York they say the last bohemian leaving New York. Is it true?
Well, it was a very interesting day today, because I've had these sort of conversations with people here, and they're sort of suggesting that there would be no interest in this kind of information. So I'm thinking, well, okay, I have to take a word from the wise and think, oh, okay, well, maybe this information is too radical and too a little bit extreme or whatever. But there has to be thinking people here somewhere, and if they follow, like, I documented the reorganization of the police department. That's, you know, that police riot, if you know anything about the police, that was totally out of control, and that became considered a police riot, one of the only police riots in New York City's 20th century. It took 4 years to reorganize the police department, 4 years. And Dinkins was one of the mayors that changed the city the most, and everybody thinks, oh, about that black guy in office, what, are you kidding me? Well, it's true. Because he understood if you cannot control the streets, you cannot control the city. And you cannot control the streets unless you can control the police. So they retired a lot of the older cops. They brought in the Mullen Commission. Turns out that there were all these drugs and corruption in the police department. So they flushed out a lot of that. And so in the beginning, if you know anything about the military or the police or whatever, you realize and you look at that tape from that particular night, and it was total chaos. You know, they're beating people up, and they're not arresting the person. The white shirt's going like this. The blue shirts run by. You realize that there's no chain of command. There's no discipline. There's no following orders. That's anarchy. That's anarchy in the police department. And it took them 4 years to organize the police. They're starting off with Captain Fry and his baton, and he's saying, form a line, form a line, form a line. And that was the police pushing the police. And 4 years later, the streets would be blocked off, the park would be controlled, the police could do nothing about it. 4 years later, in a protest to step off the street, off the curb, you would be arrested. The police got totally militarized, they absolutely got total control, and that was Dinkins who changed it. Then the military is now in power. Giuliani comes into power, and he then brings in the sort of the Republican point of view, you know, money over poverty and all of that. So what happens is that he now has the force, and so he used that force. But the thing about Giuliani, the great thing, Giuliani did a couple of great things. One is he broke up the Democratic Party because New York at that time was all Democratic, which almost made it like communism because there was no way you could deal with the system because it followed the bureaucracy. Once Giuliani came into power, the system changed because now you have an opposition and an other side. So
but
that was.
But you have to admit, Clayton, New York, the reputation of New York in 20, 30 years ago was the crime city, the murder city. But this image has changed, hasn't it?
Well, you could also say it was a cultural capital of the world, and I'm saying it's not anymore. I'm saying that the art now is product, and it's only about the money. You know, all of those people, Jackson Pollock, Rothko, all of those people that came out of New York, Warhol, they weren't rich people coming to New York. They were people that were coming from, you know, the heartland and places like that, middle class, maybe below middle class. Some of them were upper class. But the real change in the thrust came from that population. So you could say, yes, it's safer now, it's nicer now, but you could also say it's no longer the cultural capital. So
it's more boring now?
It depends on whether you have the money. I mean, if your daughter is living there and she's paying $1,500 a month to share a tiny little room with three other people, I don't know. How long can she afford to keep her daughter there? So is that more boring or less boring? I don't know. If you can't be there, is it more boring or less boring? I don't know. You tell me. Could you go to New York and buy an apartment? I don't think so. So is it more boring or less boring? You tell me.
So, and you want to leave New York now for good?
If it was possible to do both, I'd like to do both. But, you know, see, the other reality is in life there's an end game, and there's a game where it's over. And so I'm sort of, you know, I mean, a lot of this is discussed in the movie, and I'm sort of moving into the end game. So I have this huge archive.
How big is it, the archive?
I don't know. I mean, you know, you could sort of get, I mean, there's thousands of pictures, a couple thousand hours of video. There's ephemera. You know, I've done a number of books, Resistance, Radical Political Social History of the Lower East Side, Captured, Film Video History of the Lower East Side. I just finished a three-volume Jewish History of the Lower East Side. So these are all anthologies. So it's, you know, I'm working on now Street Gangs in the Lower East Side. The guy, Cochise, that art that I got him into basically changed his life. Art is like God. I mean, you know, for all you religious people out there, don't get freaked out. But there's an innocence that comes with art. There's a naivete. And in order to be really creative, you have to go into that part of who you are. And art can change people like that. It's changed juvenile delinquents. It's changed criminals. It's, you know, it has that sort of power. And so I think there's a lot of positive effects to it. I mean,
you want to not only to leave New York, you want to leave the United States as a whole.
You know, it's not that I want to leave. There's a quotation in there where I say, I'm not leaving the Lower East Side, the Lower East Side left me. And almost like I say, where I am, you know, that older guy in the video, Taylor Mead, he was a Warhol superstar. He's 88 years old. He lived in the fifth floor of a building. They emptied out, the landlord came into that block. He bought out a lot of the buildings. Like I say, all of those businesses that were there were successful, all got pushed out. So you have an 88-year-old man living by himself on the fifth floor with the door to the roof, which is open. There's fresh graffiti on the roof, and he's in there by himself. And they turned the building into a construction site, which means they're drilling holes through his wall. There's dust, there's noise from 7 in the morning until 6 at night, which is kind of a nice way to treat an 88-year-old guy, right? He can't really come up and down the stairs. So you're going to put him in the middle of this pollution tent. So, I mean, I created a lot of noise about that. I've written a lot of stories for a local newspaper called The Villager. So, you know, that story got 89 comments, which is one of the most comments. It was a record for that paper, because there's still decent people there that realize that you cannot treat an elderly man like that. I mean, it's criminal, it's bad. And you see, fascism can come in many ways. And money, it turns out, is more dangerous than drugs, because with drugs, you can lock the door, you know the guy in the street. You know, I photographed all kinds of bad people, good people, in-between people. I never had a problem. I went around with an expensive camera. Nobody ever robbed me. But money is different. You can't lock the door on money. And, like, how does a mayor for a dollar a year triple his billions? So, what's your question?
For six years now, the United States has a president, Barack Obama. Everybody had so great hopes in not only in the States, but
so
abroad.
Who had this great hope? You tell me who had the hope.
Me, for instance.
Okay, so basically what you're saying, probably if we sort of pared down what it is you're saying, you're basically saying the middle class and below really had a lot of appreciation for somebody like an Obama. For the most part, the Koch brothers, the Cheneys, the Bushes, the wealthy, the billionaires, the Bloombergs, they didn't have an appreciation for him. So then it comes out, well, who in the end is, controlling him? I mean, we just came out of a war where all of a sudden we left. The country is almost ruined. Detroit is bankrupt. The school system is not working. It's like, you know, the healthcare system is not working. We just spent $1 trillion on a war. $1 trillion, not $1 billion. I could never count to $1 trillion if I would get lost by the time I got to $1 million, but I could never do it if I spent the rest of my life counting. One, two, you know, $1 trillion. And then it turns out that now we have armed ISIS, maybe not on purpose, but how many billions of dollars is that military equipment worth? And then all of a sudden we see this thing in Ferguson, and all of a sudden this suburb, like here compared to Innsbruck, all the police have all this heavy military equipment. So now we're talking about ISIS and going to war with them. Well, obviously, we've given away a lot of the weaponry and things, so we have to bring back the military and bring back the weapons. So how many more $1 trillion are we going to spend on ISIS? So, yeah, Obama turns out to be a disappointment. He turns out to be part of the status quo. And that status quo is
no matter who is president, the system stays the same. The system is stronger.
Well, to be honest with you, from my point of view, I'm never going to meet Bush, I'm never going to meet Cheney, I'm never going to have a dialogue with them. So my real concentration is neighborhood, where I am. If I can change where I am, then I can have an influence on a much larger scale. And it is possible. You know, that video camera changed how people dealt with protests and things, so that was an equalizing force. Little brother, that concept, you know, what you get on Oprah and other places, people got the idea, and that changed that dynamic. The baseball cap changed the history of the baseball cap. So what I'm saying is, as an individual, it's possible to do something that creates a change that can have an influence that's much bigger than yourself. And the idea is to try to change the world. That's my idea anyway. So, a little fantasy there, but you know, what are you going to do?
And the amazing thing, ladies and gentlemen, is Clayton Patterson wants to move himself and his archive to Bad Ischl. To Bad Ischl. Do you really think that's a good idea?
I mean, I have the flower and I have the pin, but I have friends there. I don't know if it's a good idea or not. I mean, it's would it survive in New York? I don't think so. Is Bush interested in my archives? I don't think so. Are there any thinking people here that could decide to follow the process, the reorganization of the police department, and look at how they became militarized? If anybody has that kind of curiosity, I think the archives would give them a fountain to draw from to try to learn, to educate. The process of gentrification. Are you being gentrified here? I don't know. Do you have Starbucks here? I mean, do you have, you know, are the international corporations coming here? That's what I was asking Rome today. How many wealthy billionaires are moving to Austria? And I bet you lots.
Do you know that they're still celebrating the emperor's birthday in Bad Ischl every August 18?
Well, that's all right. I mean, you know, what does that have to do with me? What's that? Yeah, the Kaiser now. Well, let's not go that far. But no, do I believe that it would be possible? I mean, I've organized a lot of things. This here proves, actually, I'm here because of Alan Kaufman, because Alan Kaufman introduced me to you people at the festival, which is a real blessing for me. And so it is possible to make change. Alan and I do the ACKERS. And this
I'm not here.
Yes, right. So we'll say on Sunday that Alan Kaufman. But we work on the ACKERS together. The ACKER is giving an award to people who have made contributions to the avant-garde. So all of a sudden, we live in an international world now, so it turns out that there's ACKER winners in this room. So that whole concept is embracing also parts of Austria. So is it possible to take parts of New York and parts of America and bring it to Austria and make that kind of change and take Austria there? I do think it's possible. And that's the idea, is by trying to work together, trying to create something, trying to make something happen. And by doing that, you can make something happen. That's why I was saying, like with your son there, was it Julian? I mean, it might be possible to, because I'm trying to get these filmmakers together in New York City that are independent, that make independent films. And so we have somebody from Texas that's going to be there on the 16th when I get back, and there's going to be people from, you know, one of my greatest blessings. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm anti-American or anything like that, because I'm not. What it is that the youth are really who appreciate what it is that I've done. Like the people that made that movie, that was their first movie and they were in their 20s. So for me, it's a blessing to meet the young people like that. So I'm trying to get together a collective of those people in different places to create this sort of film, you know, so a support system. And would it be possible to integrate to Austria into that? Of course. I mean, it all depends on the person you're trying to integrate. If a person has no ambition, well, okay, go back to sleep. If somebody's awake and wants to do something, it might be possible to do something. So it's also up to the individuals in this room. And Roland thinks I'm nuts to try to think about bringing the archive to Austria, because he doesn't think there's anybody interested in it. But I don't know. Maybe you're right.
Do you believe more into Europe than into the United States?
Well, you know, life is about the few people that you meet that change your life. Life is about your friends and the people. And I have good friends in Badisho. There's a person by the name of Johan Ur that started this show called Tattoo and Wild Style. And he brought me to Europe, and I brought over famous tattoo artists and sideshow artists to Austria. And I believe that we helped change the whole sort of aesthetic of tattooing in Austria, because we went on this tour, and every small town and city we went to, it brought these internationally highly qualified, technically competent, intelligent artists, and that left a residue behind. So it is possible to make those kind of changes.
After all those years, are you a pessimistic or an optimistic person?
I've always been pessimistic, but optimistic at the same time. I like to have, you know, I see it as visions. You know, people say, you know, in New York, the night of the riot, people sort of, there was a, you know, a lot of things come out of the subconscious, and the subconscious sign that came that night was 1988 equals 1933. Well, you think about that one. But do I think I have a vision for how this thing would work? I think so. I mean, is it possible? You know, one is always lucky. I mean, you know, I was lucky with Elsa. I mean, we lived together for, you know, since 1972. So, you know, sometimes you're lucky with certain things. And so can you predict that? No, you can't predict that. But, you know, in the end, it was a wonderful thing.
What gives you a reason for being optimist in this world? Sometimes I'm working for the news business myself, but if you listen to news, you would rather turn it off immediately, you know. Just to protect yourself.
You know, I would say, is the news anymore? I used to be really good at pitching stories, and it's very difficult now to pitch stories because the media is such that it's very hard to make a living in the media. It's very hard to follow stories and to have them support you following a story like you used to be able to follow. And they want the news to be much more immediate, and they want it to be like, what's going on today? So you might have an idea about corruption where you would have to spend 6 months sort of following those leads and spending your time on it, and the chance of doing that is minimal. So the power comes from within. That's what I believe. You know, you carry your own power, you don't carry your own power. You have the belief or you don't have the belief. Look, I came from the working class, so for me to go to New York and to have that kind of influence, everything is wrong with that picture. You know, if Roland saw me as a little boy and said, you're going to New York, you think you're going to do something, he'd say, you better think about it again. So, I mean, it's kind of a who-knows situation.
Would you do all of it again?
You know, one of the reasons that I want to come here is because I want to be free. And what that freedom means is, like I say, I'm in the end game. So I would like to get back to doing art. Alan and I were talking about this today, although Alan's not here. But it's about, you know, having the opportunities to sort of recreate your life in a sort of different kind of structure. And I've been very sort of political and active in New York in that kind of way, and I would like to sort of unchain myself from a lot of those problems. Is it possible? I don't know. Maybe the world here is changing so much, and it's just a few years behind New York, and so maybe here it's the same as there. I don't know. But I would like to spend the rest of my life sort of maybe making art or looking back, putting the archives in order or whatever. So it's about freedom.
If you really decide to do it in Austria, you're very welcome. Please consider doing it really in Bad Ischl. But anyway, you're always welcome here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Clayton Patterson.
Right. Anybody have any quick questions? Just
if there are any questions from the audience, please.
Matilda said it's time to go. So anyway, thank you very much. I hope it made sense. And, you know, I hope there's some curious people.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. I think it was okay.